The following is part one of a two-part interview with Catherine Garrison, one of the authors of the web-exclusive article, Formative and Summative Assessments in the Classroom. In part one, Kate talks about the five myths surrounding formative assessment.
Hello, this is Mary Henton, Director of Integrated Media Initiatives at National Middle School Association, and I'm pleased to be talking with Catherine Garrison, who is the Manager of Products and Services for Professional Development with Measured Progress. And Kate's role is to enhance business opportunities with clients and partnership organizations. She's been an educator for 21 years. Kate taught high school and middle school English language arts, including sheltered instruction for English language learners. She's also worked as a national language arts consultant and has written for National Middle School Association for our Middle Ground publication and also for some web exclusive publications. Kate, it's great to have you here today and have some conversation around formative assessment.
Well, thank you, Mary. It's always good to talk with National Middle School Association, and it's certainly a pleasure to be talking about formative assessment and helping people with their understanding.
And I should make clear that this is part one of a two-part conversation we're going to have about formative assessment. Today we were going to look at the myths or talk about debunking the myths around formative assessment, because it's my understanding and talking with you over time that people have misconceptions, misunderstandings about formative assessment. So we thought we'd have a little bit of time here to clarify some of that.
I think that's such a great idea, because in this world of high-stakes testing and certainly accountability under No Child Left Behind, people are becoming a little confused when they hear of another type of assessment that's out there. And I think taking the time today to talk about what the reality of formative assessment is as opposed to what the myths are will really help educators understand where this fits in with a comprehensive assessment program.
Yes, absolutely. And it occurs to me that probably one of those first myths is the fact that formative assessment is just another test.
That's right. I think everybody in the educational world has become a little jumpy around the term test or assessment. And that is because oftentimes there is a feeling that we're over-testing our children. In some cases, in some districts, that may actually be true, because the answer to student achievement is not necessarily more tests, it's better tests or high-quality assessments. And one of the best ways to look at student achievement is in the classroom, and the best way to do that is with formative assessment. Formative assessment is not just another test. It is not a testing event in isolation. In truth, formative assessment is a process. So the way to best categorize this or think about it in terms is that formative assessment is a verb as opposed to a noun. It's something that you actually do. There has been a lot of conversation, fortunately, around formative assessment in not only the world of assessment where and measurement with organizations that function in that arena, but also drilling down into the classroom. And it's a good time to really take a look at what formative assessment is and is not, and what that means for teacher practice. The organization called CCSSO, which is the Council of Chief State School Officers, actually has a committee that is working directly on the topic of formative assessment. And they have all the gurus, so to speak, on that committee. And they came up with a definition for it. And I'm going to read it to you. It is, formative assessment is a process used by teachers and students during instruction that provides feedback to adjust ongoing teaching and learning to improve students' achievement of intended outcomes. Now, if you listen closely to that definition, there are some key aspects that should pop out that reinforce the idea that formative assessment is a verb, not a noun. And some of those key words are that it's a process, it's used by teachers and students. It's not just something that teachers use to evaluate or to create grades. It happens during the instructional process. It gives feedback to adjust ongoing teaching and learning. So it is part of that instructional process during the learning. It doesn't come after the fact. And I think those are some of the key aspects of formative assessment and this definition that will help people frame their understanding of it.
And clearly separates it out as not a test. It is a process. And the points that you just highlighted clearly make that point.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's go on to a next step, though. Okay, so if it is a process, it's ongoing, it's something we do during the instruction, it's involving students and teachers. Okay, there's still another myth that formative assessment is a product that you can buy.
Yes, and I think that this is where much of the confusion has been coming around or revealing itself in the eyes of educators, and that's because there are products out there, off-the-shelf assessments that are actually interim or benchmark assessments that have been labeled formative assessments with a plural on the end or as formative assessment. And if formative assessment is a process, it's not a product. Interim and benchmark assessments have a purpose in a comprehensive system. They can yield some rich information about programmatic or clusters of students, helping teachers to think about curriculum alignment and program alignment and placement. But it is not happening during the instructional process. So if it's not happening during the instructional process, it happens after the fact. It falls in the category of more of a summative. Formative assessment, then, is not something you can buy off the shelf. Certainly, there are tools that you can use formatively, graphic organizers, and certainly many of the materials that come as ancillary products associated with textbooks can be used formatively as long as they're being used during that instructional process and are providing both the teacher and student with feedback to adjust that learning, to adjust that instruction in real time. It's happening now. We're going to deal with these misconceptions and get the student back on track, or we're going to discover at that moment that one student or two students or maybe even the whole class is much further ahead than we initially realized, and we're going to accelerate the learning, whatever that information is. But it's not an event. It doesn't come in a box. It's not given interimly. It is truly part of the instructional flow in a classroom. And there are many, many, many different ways that teachers can gather that information.
I hear you use the word during instruction. So I'm understanding as we have this conversation, increasingly so, that the importance of this is being a process during instruction and for teachers and students. So what I'm hearing you also say is that there might be products or tools that are those sort of off the shelf, but they are not formative assessment. They could be used formatively, but not as their own assessment techniques.
Correct. And we want to help educators to understand the true differentiators between interim and benchmark assessment and formative assessment. Interim and benchmark, as I said, do have a place, and there's nothing wrong with them. They're absolutely a wonderful thing to have as part of a comprehensive assessment program within a district or a school, but it is not formative assessment in the true sense of when we think about adjusting learning in real time, day by day, minute by minute, as misconceptions and understandings happen during the process with your students.
You're already beginning to debunk a third myth that I was going to throw out here, and that third myth is that formative assessment is easy to label and easy to identify. You already hinted that it isn't necessarily easy to identify.
You know, it really isn't, in the sense that people want to say, well, show me what it is. And really, it's when formative assessment is a pedagogy. It's part of the instructional process, and it's been called many different things. We hear formative assessment, we hear assessment for learning, we hear informative assessment, transformational assessment. All of those terms do follow a certain key set of ideas about what formative assessment happens to be. So it's not so much what you label, it's really about what is contained within that process. And it's not something that you can easily see, because even though there may be many different techniques that teachers are using to gather information in their classrooms, they can be doing observations, they can be having students respond to high quality questions or working on products. They can be having conversations with their students, or students can be conversing with each other, student-led conferencing. All of those things you might be able to actually see if you were to walk into a classroom. But the tickler there is formative assessment is then using that information. So that's what's hard to see, because you cannot get into the head of the teacher or the student who is then making decisions about that. You can interview people. You could set up an observational protocol and go in and observe a classroom looking for key aspects of information gathering that is then used formatively to adjust instruction, and then talk about it afterwards. But it's not like you could walk in, do, you know, a 5x5 when I arrived, or a standard walkthrough as an administrator, and walk into a classroom and have a checklist of observable things that are formative assessment. So we really want to continue to think about this as pedagogy, and it's part of that instructional process, and that we want to talk about the information that teachers are gathering about student learning during the instructional process, and then debrief it. You know, what did you learn about that? What adjustments did you make? What did you see then as a result of those adjustments in student learning or student understanding?
So as an observer, whether I'm a parent who wants to see what's going on in the classroom, or the principal or an administrator, I've got to be careful that I'm not getting stuck on seeing tools being used, graphic organizers you mentioned, or certain types of questioning, etc. That's just step one. I have to then make sure I'm having some conversation with the teacher or the students about, okay, so now what are you doing with that information, or how are you applying what you've gathered, or reacting or responding to what you've gathered through that tool?
Exactly. So when we think about formative assessment, there have been previously identified 5 key strategies of it, and this comes from a group of gurus, you may say, Leahy, Lyon, Thompson, and Willem, who put their heads together and came up with 5 key strategies of formative assessment. And it's really about clarifying and sharing learning intentions prior to the instructional process, and helping students understand what are those goals, what is the purpose of this, and then the criteria for success. What does success look like? What is that roadmap? What is the expectation? So the students understand what success looks like through exemplars and rubrics. And then along that, after, you know, sharing those learning intentions prior to the instructional process with students, is in the planning, if this is the goal or the target where I'm heading my students, how am I going to engineer classroom discussions and questions and high-quality tasks and engaging the students in the learning to get them to that target? And along the way, as we're moving through discussions and questioning and tasks and student-to-student and whole class and flexible grouping, what kind of feedback am I giving my students in an ongoing fashion to make sure that they understand where they are in that process? Rick Stiggins calls this, where am I now, where am I going, and how am I going to get there? It's a 3-part way of looking at it, and I think that's a wonderfully good way to think about that movement, that if we share that learning intention and we understand and help the students understand where they are at that time, and then help them create goals and a roadmap through varying tasks and discussions with feedback to continually make them pull through. And through this whole process, the beauty of it is that you're activating students as owners of their own learning, and that you're really developing what we want that has been called through the years a student-centered classroom. And in that, then students become engaged with each other, and they see each other as peer resources and peer reviewers. And that really just totally enhances the whole aspect and philosophy at the center of what a good middle school classroom looks like.
Well, you've kind of taken us into the next myth, and that is that formative assessment is something new to the teaching profession. It's the latest bandwagon. What do you have to say to that?
You know, that's an interesting point, Mary, that so often when we engage teachers in thinking about professional growth and truly understanding that after 21 years in classroom myself and 16 as a middle school teacher, that there is so much that is often put on educators' plates. And oftentimes, oh, this is just, you know, the new phase, the new bandwagon, this too shall pass. But if we really take a look at the research behind formative assessment, which has been ongoing over the past 20 years or so, but is really deeply embedded. I mean, if you just think about those five things that I mentioned as key strategies, really have been part of good teaching for a long time. They've been identified as solid pedagogical and instructional strategies for a long, long time, and good teachers have been doing some of those things intuitively. The shift then becomes with more understanding of formative assessment as practice and process linked directly to instruction, that teachers do this intentionally. They are using specific techniques and strategies in their classroom, planned for and with an intentional purpose of getting information about student learning in real time so they can make solid adjustments. And truly, that's what is at the heart of differentiation. It's that ongoing gathering of student information, engaging the students in the conversations about where they are, reinforcing what the target is and criteria is for success, and helping students to understand metacognitively where they are in their learning, so they become engaged. This is not new. We've known this for years, that this is central to quality instruction and learning in the classroom, and is imperative to improve student achievement. So we don't want people to, educators to feel that, oh, this is something new, it's bandwagon. It's really at the heart. And you know, truthfully, Mary, that when teams of teachers and schools and districts start down the path to embrace formative assessment and begin to investigate it and learn about it together, what they're doing is taking a step back from this huge accountability pressure and taking ownership and deriving accountability from within, because they're recognizing that they do have the power of information about student learning, and they do have the power to make the necessary changes at an immediate time and an appropriate time during the instructional process.
Well, let's take a look at the fifth, last myth here, and that is that formative assessment is a set of techniques and strategies.
Yes. You know, I think oftentimes we want to be able to say, here it is, go do it, or to see a list and to be able to check it off and say, yes, I'm doing that. We learned about that through the writing process years and years ago. The writing process is a cyclical event. It's not something that, you know, you draft on Monday, you peer review on Tuesday, you revise on Wednesday, you second draft on Thursday, and you do final edit on Friday. It's not a lockstep process, and formative assessment is not as well. And we can talk about those five key strategies, and if you look deeply or think deeply about, you know, that sharing of learning intentions and criteria prior to instruction and effective instructional vehicles to move students there, feedback to help students understand where they are and what they can do to continue to improve and move forward, and student engagement both peer and individually, that's culture in a classroom. It's not something that you check off a list. It is really developing through normative behavior how learning is going to happen in this classroom, and pulling students into that process and helping them take ownership of it. There are thousands of little techniques you can use to do that. Exit slips and thumbs up, thumbs down, checking for understanding, writing high-quality questions, engaging students in peer review. Those are all techniques that support that culture and become embedded in that culture, but it's not a lockstep checkoff. We really have to take a look at what is the culture of learning in our classroom. What am I doing to engage my students? We often hear the students aren't engaged. They see no relevancy in this work. But what are we doing to help them with that? And now, if teachers and teams of teachers, schools, and districts were to take a look at the research behind formative assessment and understand that this process builds culture in the classroom that pushes students into ownership of their learning, engages them, and a byproduct is more achievement, higher achievement, and students that see purpose in their learning.
And we would hope that students that as they see purpose in their learning, as you mentioned, they're not only going to achieve, but then they're going to excel. They're going to stay in school, move on, prepare for post-secondary education, and truly
become lifelong learners.
Absolutely, absolutely, which is what we want.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I appreciate this conversation. And when we talk next, we'll pick up that conversation about culture and like to hear more about what that culture is. How do we get there? What does it look like? And go to the next step in this conversation. So thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you, Mary. I look forward to our next conversation.
For further reading on this topic, please check out the web-exclusive article, Formative and Summative Assessment in the Classroom, at www.nmsa.org. Thank you for joining us on today's Middle Level Educator.